You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's Rakuten.
Anna Sheridan, missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Or did I talk to the sleep addict?
Someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil. There's no place for ghost stories in this investigation or any other.
I need you to find me.
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.
Hi, I'm Keegan.
And I'm Madigan.
And you're listening to
Your Angry Neighborhood Feminist.
This is a podcast where we explore the world through our own personal feminist perspectives.
And this week we're talking about male airline pilots.
We were just saying how when we were doing the prep for this episode and we put it into Google, that's what came up for Madigan. And for me, it was all like articles about the differences between men and women's fight or flight response,
which is fascinating. Yeah. I would love to know about that. I'm sure with men, a lot of times it's fight, and women, it's like flight or freeze, probably.
Yeah, I didn't open any of them
because you're like, this isn't relevant to me.
Isn't what I'm here for.
Yeah, so I got a lot of like male airline attendants and male pilots, and I was like, this is not what I wanted. But this week, we are talking about a phenomenon called male flight, which Keegan brought to my attention recently through a series of TikTok videos.
Yes.
That she sent me.
Yeah, which I will definitely talk about later, and I will give her credit where it's due, because I feel like she brought this phenomenon to a lot of people's attention.
Even though
it is something that they've been talking about in like academic journals for a while, because I found quite a few of those, but they were behind paywalls.
Or you had to be in from a school or a mm-hmm. library and things like that. There were a lot of papers, and it sounds like there are, you know, it was a lot of different variations in the Google machine for me to find different things. Yeah. And so it was a lot of like
sociology. You're like male flight sociology.
Or like feminization of occupations, feminization of sports, things like that. And so kind of going down it that way as well, I think was really interesting because all of this kind of encompasses why men think things that are feminine are bad, essentially why they must flee from what is feminine.
Yeah, I mean, this episode is talking about male flight, but it is more broadly talking about male fragility. Like mm-hmm. that is really at the crux of this entire thing. And let's talk a little bit about the term. So male flight is derived from the term white flight, which is the departure of whites from places such as urban neighborhoods or schools, increasingly or predominantly populated by minorities. So minorities moving into a space and then white people fleeing away from that space. And so this term is derived from that term. So male flight is the phenomenon in which, as an activity, occupation, or product is increasingly associated with women, men leaf.
Yes.
And like you said, I'd first heard about this phenomenon on TikTok when a user by the handle of Ali_202_ had a video on the subject that went viral. It got like over
millions
6 million
or something
views. Yeah. And she has lots of other really great videos on feminism and stuff. So if you're interested, please go check her out. Definitely want to give her all the credit for bringing this to our attention.
Yeah.
In her video, she talks about how cheerleading used to be an almost completely male sport. Secretaries used to be men, and things like makeup, wigs, and high heels were also created for men. And it wasn't until women started making their way into the space that we saw the number of men in that space decrease, which was a fascinating concept to me, right?
Right.
So veterinarians, for instance, used to be all men, but you may have noticed lately that there are a lot more women on the scene. I mean, my vet is a woman.
Mine's a man, but whatever.
Just putting it out there.
Breaking the stereotype.
But that's because as soon as women started showing up, dudes kind of dipped. So there was this report from the National Library of Medicine that said that in the United States and Canada, women constitute approximately 80% of the veterinary college student population. So the study of veterinary school applicants, for example, found that for every 1% increase in the proportion of women in the student body, 1.7 fewer men applied.
Yeah.
Which is just like a teensy tiny little increase. Like there's 1% more women applying to go to the school. And for every one woman who applied, there was almost two who were like, no, 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 thank you.
Right. Exactly. Well, and it is interesting because sociologists in particular have been kind of studying why or how or if this is a phenomenon. And there have been many different studies. And one that I was reading about was where one man, one woman would be told descriptors of like the opposite of their sex. So like a man would be told that he was feminine and a woman would be told that they were masculine. And in this study, when women were described as masculine, you know, they would maybe be a little bit like confused or whatever, but there was no sort of like real negative response to that. It was just kind of like took it as it was. But for men who were described as feminine, they would have a much more heated response. And I actually found the findings in this study to be kind of interesting. I think this was from like the 80s or 90s. These men also expressed more support for war, homophobic attitudes, and an interest in purchasing an SUV.
Yeah, I read that same thing.
I was like, so manly.
I put in parentheticals, that last bit is just kind of funny. And
I just wrote in parentheticals, so manly. Yeah.
And that's from the University of Chicago Press Journals. So like you said, while men seem to take affront to anything that is female dominated, women don't feel the same way. You know, there are lots of names was an example of male flight, right?
Like I actually have like a list of a few names because I feel like those would kind of be surprising to people. But yeah, there are names like Ashley, Carol, Vivian, Doris, Mackenzie, you know, all these
Madison,
names that that we consider to be female names that once, you know, upon a time, they were predominantly male. But then once, you know, unisex names and things like that came into popularity, more men stopped having those names.
Right. It's very interesting how that swings, where a unisex name, you almost always think of a unisex name as being
more of a boy's name for a girl.
Yes.
Yeah.
And not the other way around. Like Keegan, for instance, is a boy's name. Like,
right.
Whenever I born, it was in. Yes. It's
even though the only other Keegan I've ever known is a girl, my cousin, which
I
is
know
wild.
A boy Keegan.
I do know one boy. Did he go to our school?
No.
Okay. Because I knew a boy Keegan that went to our school that was interesting.
But also, yes, it is stupid to gender names. Like that is a dumb thing.
Right.
You know, we're not saying it's not, but it is a useful
historically, you know,
example for this episode. And
yeah,
whenever I was a kid, I mean, Keegan is a traditionally historically male name, masculine name. And now it is in the unisex portion of the baby book.
Well, and that's because girls having masculine traits is like something for a father to be proud of. It's something for girls to feel proud of because they're not like the other girls. They're tougher.
Exactly.
They're stronger. They're better. And they're more like their male counterparts. And it's this weird thing, which is why, like, I feel like a lot of young girls, when they're called tomboys and things like that, it almost is like being, you wear that with a badge of honor in a way.
Yes,
because women can carry that with a sense of pride because the patriarchy has told us that the closer you are to the, you know, same existence as men, the more equal you are. So that's why I can understand why a woman being called masculine wouldn't really be
exactly
offensive.
So this is called androcentrism.
Yes.
And that is the propensity to center society around men and men's needs, priorities, and values, and to relegate women to the periphery. So androcentrism also positions men as the gender neutral standard while marking women as gender specific.
Which is why we have, you know, firemen, policemen, you know, a lot of the language that we use is very male-centric. It's all part of that same term.
Yes. And so because of this, the women are often expected to perform femininity, because we can't say that throughout history, women haven't been punished in one way or another for masculine traits.
Of course.
That's true. But they are often admired and rewarded when they perform masculinity. And it's just like you said, it's very similar to that, like, not like the other girls trope. Girls who can perform well with what society considers to be male tasks, such as fixing a car, wielding a weapon, preferring whiskey or beer to fruity cocktails or wine.
Right.
Even though they might experience some backlash, they are often held up as being different or prized or unique, you know,
right,
interesting.
But anything for men, that is in the scope of, and like, and you're going to fit in with your guy friends better. You know what I mean? And for a lot of girls, that's another, you know, kind of badge to wear.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it also, in a society that was built for men, I think it's also, it speaks to your ability to survive, right?
Yes,
it's
like, oh, that's a great point.
You can survive better because you're more able to adapt to a male-centered world or
great
society.
Point.
But for men, it's the opposite. So since we value masculinity over femininity, men being involved in activities that would be traditionally considered female, they're scorned. They're viewed as weak, right?
Right.
So this can lead to displays of toxic masculinity. And I gave, or Madigan gave, an example of masculine overcompensation, which is that thesis from that journal, what was that from? University of Chicago Press Journal.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That said that men liked to drive SUVs. So that actually said, it's from the masculine overcompensation thesis, and it asserts that men react to masculinity threats with extreme demonstrations of masculinity. And this proposition was tested in a number of studies. One is the one that you mentioned earlier. And then there is another study, which was study 3, that showed in a large-scale survey on a diverse sample that men who reported that social changes threaten the status of men also reported more homophobic and pro-dominance views, support for war, and belief in male superiority. So
yeah,
anytime they felt threatened in their position as the superior, they would become more toxic and more aggressive. And
right,
so you see that kind of come into play with this male flight.
Yeah.
It's like they're either going to fight it or they're going to leave the space altogether.
Exactly. And I think that we would be remiss not to mention how much homophobia comes into play,
yes,
as well.
Yeah.
And that was something that became really obvious, not so much in like the sociological studies that I was reading, but also kind of applying it to my own life, especially when talking about cheerleading. I did a whole, I went on the cheerleading Wikipedia page. I went into like a history of cheerleading website. Mm-hmm. I took a whole bunch of notes on it just because I was very fascinated by all of that. But it also really reminded me of figure skating, which is something I know much better than cheerleading. And thinking about how figure skating was traditionally like every other sport for men.
Right.
Women were not allowed to participate in any of those sort of physical activities. They were there to raise children and cook and clean, and that was about it. And it wasn't until a woman named Madge Sayers was the first woman to compete in the male-dominated sport in 1902, which opened the door for women to compete. And then since then, it slowly became more of a female-dominated sport, and it also became a sport, which I've talked about a lot on this show, that is incredibly homophobic.
Yes.
Yeah. Even though the sport has been given this very feminine stamp, and it's something that I...
Well, because of, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I really witnessed when I was younger. For any skating fans out there, if you remember the rivalry between Johnny Weir and Evan Lysacek. So a lot of us know Johnny Weir because mm-hmm. he's the announcer now.
Very prominent within that community. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And he is very out loud and proud, but he didn't actually come out until after he quit skating. There was some absolutely horrific homophobic things that were said about Johnny Weir during his time in competing, and Evan Lysacek would spur that on a lot. He was a much more masculine, you know, he only wore like all black basic
masculine
outfits and
kind of,
yes,
yeah,
and skated to really strong drum heavy music.
Oh, look
and
at the big bad man.
Exactly. And I grew up with guys like that. There's a kid named Alex that I skated with that always was like trying to prove how straight he was all the time. And it was like super obnoxious, right? But then we also see that's still happening today. Nathan Chen, for example, who is our most recent Olympic champion, who I love very much. You know, he's very young. And in a podcast, he said some things that were a little bit controversial. He expressed his frustrations with the speculations people make about his sexuality because he's a skater. He made some poorly received comments saying, as a straight male athlete in a fairly homosexual dominated sport or LGBTQ dominated sport, that caused a lot of uproar because it's also not like if you look at the whole, mm-hmm. I mean, because a lot of people aren't out, so we don't really even have that statistic.
It's also just very weird to gender sports.
Like, it is
very strange.
And to his credit, I watched the video from this podcast and the interviewer kind of was giving him a hard time being like, don't you want to play hockey? Don't you want to like, so to me, it seemed because it was two guys talking. It did kind of seem like this guy was kind of like, why would you choose figure skating?
Do they realize it's so frustrating to me just because he's a man and these are both sports that involve skates on ice.
Yeah.
They're not similar, really. Like, they're very different sports.
Right. Well, and he goes on to say there is that connotation and there is that, well, we don't really want to watch guys skate around and we'd rather watch hockey or watch females do that, which I think is pretty messed up in and of itself. So although he did make some kind of like sketchy comments about like the queer community and figure skating and things like that, he did also bring up the fact that he has experienced some level of homophobia in himself as well because of the way that mm-hmm. people perceive this sport.
Because you're always not feeling like you have to quote unquote defend yourself.
And you and don't it's not even have to, anything, but people make you right. feel like you have to.
Exactly.
And because yeah. if you're gay, that makes you less of a man or anything like that. And like, it's this horrible stereotype that's been around forever. And the fact that, you know, we see it continuing to this day in sports. I mean, Adam Rippon in 2016 was in big trouble for wearing this like little tiny mesh top.
Yeah, I remember.
And there are like all of these really particular rules, like men still can't wear tights. They have to wear pants. And up until recently, like up until my last year of skating, I'm pretty sure women couldn't wear pants.
What are you so scared of? Like these people who make these rules, I'm like, what do you think is going to happen to you if you see a man in tights?
Well, like, it is this old white run sport, just like all of them are, that are so focused on their image that they're actually ruining their fucking image because they're focused on it so much. And I think a lot of that is very similar when you look at things like cheerleading and yes. you look at men that are in cheerleading. And then I also know some men that play volleyball.
Yeah.
And how men are treated that enjoy playing volleyball.
Especially like beach volleyball and things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but cheerleading is a big one, a big one. I mean, having been a cheerleader when Bring It On was a big deal, or right after Bring It On was a big deal.
I've still never seen that movie.
First of all, look, it's got issues, of course, because right. of the year it came out. But for me, it's very nostalgic. It's very nostalgic for me. I love that movie. But there's homophobia in that movie. The movie kind of says, it makes a lot of gay jokes and says like, well, you're either gay or you have to defend yourself where you're like, I'm not gay. This is just where I get to hang out with all the chicks. Like you right. have to be like hyper masculine or gay to be a male cheerleader.
Right.
And those are the only two kind of like acceptable things. And you're always, again, defending your heterosexuality.
Exactly.
If you aren't gay.
Which is like so messed up. You don't have to do that. Just right. love who you I love.
Mean, and then also, you know, and we're about to go into this whole section of it. Or I do have a lot to say on this section of it. But since we're talking about cheerleading, the other part of it is because it is so predominantly female as a sport, even though it wasn't always, but it is now, the way people diminish cheerleading as not a sport,
yeah,
or diminish the
which
amount,
would not happen if men were still
right
prominent because in the sport.
It is so physically taxing.
Yeah, if gymnastics is a sport, why isn't cheerleading right. a sport? I think yeah. that like so in my high school, we had two cheer teams, and there was one for like the football games, and they sucked. They just stood there and moved their arms, and they mm-hmm. didn't really do anything. Like you'd have one cartwheel in there, but then there was like our competition team where they were like gymnasts, and they would do crazy tricks and routines, and like obviously it takes a lot of talent and skill and endurance and all of these things,
right?
You yeah. can't look at that. I mean, if you've watched Cheer on Netflix, you see that it takes the same energy as any other sport would,
but it is still a debate that people have constantly, and people will give
well
all
and
kinds
that's
of
what's so
that.
Wild because you know we talked about it. Just reminds me a little bit of talking about mental health last week and how I feel like, you know, back in ancient times, we had a better grasp on mental health than we do now. And I think that, you know, cheerleading started as being like just as important as the football players. Because when football first started, there were no fans. And then when there were fans, they were unruly and wild. So they wanted someone to be there to kind of like lead the crowd in cheer. And I think it's funny, it was actually someone who like went to Princeton and then went to the University of Minnesota that actually started the first cheer team at the U of M, which I'm like, that's really cool. And it was really about like the physical fitness of the men and the skills that they could do and the chance. I mean, they are the rah-rah shish kumba creators here. Mm-hmm. Yet we look at it as diminished cheerleading so much, I think, especially yes. because of how it's evolved in sports culture. Yeah. I'm watching the show Winning.
And in pop culture as well.
Yeah. Have you watched, I think it's called Winning Time on HBO?
No, not yet.
It is so good. It's about
Adam McKay, about the Lakers, right?
It's about the Lakers, mm-hmm. but it's like about like the Showtime Lakers going from like basic basketball games to like entertainment at the Forum and shortening those skirts and making everything sexy and hot and exciting and floor seats and everything like that. And it raises that level of like sex appeal in cheerleading yeah. as well, mm-hmm. which is also going to be something that
the
we equate to
of cheerleading.
Exactly. Like, yeah, we equate that like sexiness with women as well. So having a man in that doesn't
which
make
has
sense
allowed
to society.
Also, which has allowed also people to mistreat cheerleaders. Like we see it all the time with professional cheerleaders, the amount of like sexual harassment and objectification that happens
yeah.
to these women who are athletes. Like anyone yeah. who is cheerleading at a professional level had to have gone through competitive cheer. And competitive cheer, if you are cheering in competitions, it is high level.
Yeah. Like, it's like every other sport, but people that don't experience it and don't see it don't have that same understanding. And I mean, that's a whole other side of female dominated sports that's so fucked up. I mean, the costumes, the uniforms for the beach volleyball players.
Oh, yeah.
The amount of harassment I got from grown men wearing skirts growing up skating, for dancers, for people who are used to maybe showing their bodies a little bit more and they're comfortable with that, how they're treated when they're out in the world because yeah. of it. That's totally not what we're talking about, but I think it all kind of goes
yeah, I
mean, into the same umbrella where femininity is just so weaponized.
Yeah, yes. And so before we go into talking about that a little bit more and about how people tend to lose respect for these jobs that become quote unquote feminized or these sports or whatever else it is, let's take a really quick break and we will be right back.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system. So wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Okay, and we're back. So because of everything that we have just talked about, because of all of this, perhaps the most frustrating yet unsurprising thing about the male flight phenomenon is that, in the words of Ali from TikTok, quote, when these things become feminine, instead of gaining respect for the women who can do them, we lose respect for the sport or the job. Because you would think, like, okay, wow,
a woman can do what a man can do.
This is incredible, right? But instead, we just
how can she do it?
We just say, well, that must not have been that good in the first place.
Or yeah, that must not have been that difficult.
Right, in the first place. So again, this is from the National Library of Medicine study on gender and veterinary medicine. The feminization of veterinary medicine has also changed the profession in other ways. Many of these changes are desirable, others maybe less so. Income may have been compromised. There may be less interest in practice ownership, and fewer graduates may be entering large animal practice. So those two things that I kind of want to focus on is income may be compromised because of the number of women who are going into this field,
right?
And that there may be less interest in this field. And
because
I really feel like
men are worried about losing that prestige that they have with having certain jobs.
Yes.
If women are also part of it. And I think this is interesting because I didn't expect my research to take this turn where I'm going to be talking about the wage gap. But I do think it's really interesting how all of this, from what I read, really does have a lot to do with the gender wage gap.
Yes, it has a ton to do with it. And I find that kind of funny because MRAs on our Instagram are so fond of telling us all the time that the wage gap does not exist.
Right.
And I'm here to tell you that the wage gap absolutely exists.
It absolutely does exist. And funnily enough, all of this kind of started back in the 1970s during the second wave of feminism, when women were starting to kind of go out and stake their claim in more male-dominated spaces. And men were not too fond of all of this. So let's talk a little bit about why men don't want women in their occupations or careers.
Well, before we jump into that, let me just throw out this statistic really quickly. So according to the United States Bureau of Labor Statistics, the gender composition of a job is the single largest contributor to the gender wage gap. It's
right.
Above all things, including unionization. So we're talking about, like, the more feminine a field becomes, the larger we see this wage gap increase.
Right.
So if you want your job to pay well, you should go into a male-dominated field. And that's an issue for a lot of reasons.
100%. Yeah, because then you're also really limiting yourself to what you want to do, and you're having to, like, think like a man and, like, find a job in something else. But honestly, I feel like it's even just the wording for some of these jobs that makes them pay differently. Like, for example, the median earnings of information technology managers, which are mostly men, are 27% higher than human resources managers, mm-hmm. which is mostly women.
Yes.
The median wage for janitors, mostly men, is 22% higher than maids and house cleaners that are mostly women. So to me, that's a janitor and a maid and a house cleaner, to me, seem to be relatively similar in occupation. Right,
right. Especially if you're talking about, say, a maid in a hotel who's expected, because I could see the difference being made in terms of, like, okay, we're talking about a housekeeper who works maybe in a home.
Right.
as opposed to a janitor or a custodian who is maybe working for an entire business or a building, right, like cleaning a whole building. But maids, for instance, who work in hotels are doing a similar amount of work.
A janitor would be doing in a large mm-hmm. office or things like that. Overall, in fields where men are the majority, the median pay is about $962 a week, which is 21% higher in occupations with the majority of women. Differences in the type of work men and women do accounts for 51% of the pay gap, a larger portion than in 1980, according to another study. So that goes to show you that because of the differences in work that I think women have been encouraged to do or have made their way into, it's giving companies more excuse to pay them less. And that's also kind of why men don't want to join typically feminine careers, because they say that, you know, if you're in an office full of women and you're the one man, you're going to be paid the same as those women. You're not going to be getting above.
Which is also not true.
Exactly.
I have a lot of notes on that as well. It actually benefits men to go into jobs that are predominantly women.
Because you will probably get promoted so fucking
fast. They will. Like, and that's another frustrating thing, is like men tend to move up the ladder in traditionally feminized careers or jobs or occupations rather, than women in those careers. It's right. Why you will see a lot of teachers. Teachers are, the vast majority of teachers are women, but the majority of principals and superintendents are men.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and that's just a common trend that you've seen throughout time. I mean, that was a big thing anecdotally from whenever I used to watch a lot of like beauty YouTubers.
Right.
That was a thing that a lot of women beauty YouTubers or beauty gurus in quotes used to have issues with, is that right, not men being in the beauty space, not men being interested in makeup and all of that stuff, but the fact that you have Jeffree Star, who is getting paid astronomically more than other beauty YouTubers who have maybe been in that sphere for a lot longer, who are women.
Totally.
And again, this is a traditionally feminine, historically feminine space.
Right. Well, I also read that when women started becoming designers more often, like fashion designers, that occupation also took a huge hit and dropped by 34% in wages after women started
joining the career. Even with things like that, like hairdressing, choreography, design, we tend to have men holding the top positions.
Can I tell you something that's kind of horrible that we used to say in skating? Because when you're young, they don't split you up between the sexes when you compete, the boys would get penis points because they want to keep the boys in the sport. So they want the boys to win. So if I was competing against a boy, I knew that I had to skate really, really good because they're going to like him no matter what. Mm-hmm. And like, that's probably also really fucked up, but that was something that was just super common. And I've heard it in like dance and stuff too, where it's like, oh, they got their penis points because there's a boy on the floor or on the ice. You know?
It's very interesting because I do feel like men are given this extra grace in women's spheres.
I think they're seen as like brave almost. Right. Like, oh my gosh, you're so different.
And we are impressed that they're able to do this, right? Like, we see a man do his own makeup as expertly as any woman.
Or maybe even better than some of the women that you've seen. Right. And that so almost makes it more impressive.
It is, yeah. Whereas women doing the same thing is not always viewed that way. Like, women in a male-dominated, you know, sphere is not viewed the same way.
Right.
But that trend we've seen across occupations. So up until the late 1800s, for instance, clerical and secretarial work had been seen as, quote, arduous labor and considered too strenuous for women. But by the 1930s, what was once considered to be labor was now considered to be a skill of dexterity, and women were almost exclusively sought after for the job. And once that happened, pay plummeted. So whenever it was male secretaries, and I think that part of it is that there was this expectation that, well, men, when they have a job, they're having to take care of their families. Whereas when women have a job, it's just extra income. It's just fun money, right? Like, it's just not taken seriously.
And why is that still like carried over to this day? Like, that's so frustrating, because that's so clearly not how women operate anymore. Because I feel like in the 1950s, that's something that you could say, you know, oh, she's working part time, whatever. This is a funner thing for her to do. But now,
even then, there were single
moms. Oh, it's always
parents.
Shitty.
You know, they were single moms.
It's always shitty. Yeah. But I can almost see it more then. And I can't forgive it now. You know that women are more than just like working for funsies.
Well, now we've decided that that labor isn't difficult. It's like that term unskilled labor that we've talked about. There really is no unskilled labor, but we like to put that label on things that poor people do or women do.
Yeah.
You know, like for some reason, we seem to think that being a custodian is unskilled labor, or being someone who like maybe works at a construction site, but sitting in an office all day working at an ad agency is skilled labor because it requires what, a certain amount of education?
Yeah. You know? It's actually interesting. A quick aside, I listened to the most recent episode of Crimes of the Centuries and it was really good. And so they talk about like why people want to keep the poor poor and so on and so forth. It's really fascinating if you all want to go listen to that. But that kind of reminded me of it as well, like why we want to keep certain minority groups down.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, and certainly that is a situation that was happening with women as well.
Yeah.
It was just like,
it's like forced sterilization and things like that because they were poor and eugenics and things like that.
Yes.
All the shittiness.
Yeah. But even in this, right? Like, so I was listening to a You're Wrong About episode, which if you don't listen to You're Wrong About, it's great. I really enjoy it. But they were talking about urban legends. And in the urban legend about the babysitter, they were talking about like, why do we have all these urban legends where the babysitter is at fault? Like, it's never the parents. Like, it's always the babysitter is at fault. Like, the babysitter accidentally puts your baby in the oven, or the babysitter gets the kid killed or whatever because you're not home. And one theory was that there was all this angst towards babysitters because the prevalence of babysitters allowed women to leave the house and seek jobs outside of the home because there was someone at home to watch their children.
Almost like a scary story to keep women from leaving their children at home with other people.
Yes.
And saying, we need you there. Without you, your baby's going to die.
Right. Yeah. There was all of this. And maybe that was subconscious, but there was all of this.
I mean, totally.
Scorn,
but that's what
put.
It sounds like, you know?
And I feel like not only did they pay women less, or did they start to pay women less when more women went into these fields? Also, probably something that we're not even talking about is that the expectation that women, they were like, well, I didn't have a job before, so I have a job now. It's cool that it pays me a quarter an hour. I'm not going to fight for more money.
Right, of course. And I think that for a long time, you know, talking about how women started getting involved in the workforce in the first place and the different reasons why women started getting, you know, jobs and careers of their own when they were really told to go against that, I think that that kind of explains a lot of it as well.
Yes. So all of this makes it very clear that it is not that we value the work that is being done less. We just value the type of worker less.
Of course.
And when women dominate in a field, we just tend to lose respect for that field completely. The value that we assign professions are largely arbitrary and they're tied up in patriarchy and male fragility more than anything else.
Totally.
That's what I came out of my research on this topic.
Yeah.
You know, came out of it with. But it all presents like a really interesting question, which is that as women tend to move into more fields, right? Like, even though there are lots of hurdles, even though things are much more difficult, there's not a field you can't enter into now, right?
Right.
Like, if you want to enter into a field, you can do that. And so,
well, and one of the things that I was reading too is like now women are more educated than men. They have almost as much work experience. Mm-hmm. There are so many reasons why women are feeling empowered to be part of any occupation that they want.
Yeah, women are significantly more likely to complete college than men are. So what happens when employers have no choice but to start hiring women in greater numbers to previously male-dominated fields? Like, will the value of those jobs continue to go down, like, as has been the trend, or will they be forced to value men and women in the same measure?
I don't know.
I think they're going to have to. Like, that's kind of how
I mean, feels. Eventually, yeah. I mean, I'm hoping that it won't just be because they'll have to, but because we will have made the strides needed in order for that to become possible.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, we have to keep talking about it.
I have thought about like, what are some examples of male flight in modern times? Because a lot of these examples feel very old. They feel very dated, right?
Yeah.
Like you talk about flight attendants was a big one, where that was another one where the pay went significantly down. And I've seen a lot of people having that conversation about video games, that was why there was such a strong reaction to like Gamergate and trying to force women out of that sphere, out of this kind of like nerdy sphere. Like that's kind of the next frontier, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Let women enter into the jock sphere and the science sphere and like, let us have our D&D and video games.
Yeah.
Like, you know, to ourselves.
No girls allowed.
Right. But it has become a progressively more feminized, for lack of a better word, environment.
Right.
Gaming.
Yeah. Oh, and I mean, if we're really going to pull far, far back on this, I mean, I think it just goes to show you too just how damaging any sort of gender norms and gender expectations are on us as people. And we've had many different discussions on the podcast throughout the years about different examples of this, whether it be, you know, like names that we discussed, or, you know, the colors blue and pink. You mm-hmm. know, it used to be that blue was a feminine color because of the Virgin Mary, and pink is a lighter tone of red, which was supposed to be more masculine, mm-hmm. obviously. And that eventually switched, like during World War II and all that kind of stuff. So it is interesting to kind of look back on how gender as a whole and needing to keep us in this binary and this hierarchy is damaging. And I'm hoping that not only will there be improvements made when it comes to the gender wage gap between men and women, but also opening the door to other identities and other people who are probably at a greater disadvantage than cisgendered women are as well.
Yeah.
So I think it is really great to kind of take a look at this and see how gender expectations in general can be so damaging to so many different facets of life.
Yeah, I think that this is also a really good example of the ripple effect, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think that you could look at this and you could say, eh, that's not really that big a deal. You know, like, ugh, men just don't want to be cheerleaders anymore, right? Like, what's the big deal?
Yeah, what's the harm?
What's the harm? And I think if you look more closely at it and you look at why that is societally, why that is, what that says about what we think about women and how we treat women, and see that it ripples down into what we pay women, what we think women are worth.
And how we treat women.
Yeah, yeah. That I think examining it more closely is important to do. I think it's important to take a close look at it. So
I'm hoping that this phenomenon, this concept becomes something more widely researched and discussed, especially because we did have a little bit, at least I felt like I had a harder time finding articles
yes.
of what oh, yeah. I wanted. You know what I mean? Of yeah. like the things that I was looking for.
There's not even a Wikipedia page on this.
No, there's Wikipedia pages for things kind of surrounding it, but there was no like Wikipedia base for me to jump off of or anything like that. So I hope that if anything, this concept and phenomenon is discussed more openly, because if anything, the more we educate people about these things, and particularly educate men about these things, it is a bit eye-opening. Like even telling the boy I used to nanny for because he thought pink was so repulsive, telling him the history of those colors and just kind of being like, you know, what you think is wrong. You know what I mean? Like, let's look at this objectively. Color right. cannot be gendered.
And also, yeah, why do you think that something that's associated with
girls
women and girls
is gross?
Is gross. Like, yeah. what's the issue there? Because yes, we've, you know, we said it already, but like on the opposite side of that, it was cool for me to be like into boys' colors and into boys' things.
Yep.
And playing with boys' toys, right? Like that made me like a cool chick.
Yeah.
Whereas like men are picked on and made fun of for those things. And I do think that we are moving more and more away from gender being this binary, right? Of just like one or the other. And so maybe these conversations will become fewer and further between when we start.
Or just much more nuanced too. Mm-hmm. I think that just in intersectionality in general, the more we open the conversation up, the more chances there are for everybody to be helped along the way. You know what yeah. I mean? I think it's all about opening our eyes to other people's experiences as well yeah. to help get to where we want to go.
It would be really nice for people to be able to just kind of be people and to say like, you know, regardless of the biological sex of whatever child I have, I just really like the name Brittany, and I'm going to name this baby Brittany, and it not be this like
you want to name a kid Brittany. I didn't know that about you.
I actually really do not want to name a kid Brittany, But
I was like, wait, what? I've never heard this before.
Not against Britney's. Oh my God, that's so funny. Just because it Britney is another one that was considered to be a boy's name.
I actually was really fascinated by the different names. Did you know that Margaret was originally a boy's name?
I did not know Margaret or Carol.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm gonna end with some interesting boy turned girl name facts here. So Ashley fell off the male charts in 1995. Carol fell off the charts after the 1920s, but it was actually very popular for boys in the 1920s. Carol.
You know what? Now that you say that, I'm like, God, that I feel like maybe there's an author or somebody.
There are some like famous people thrown in here that I mentioned. So like for Vivian, that dropped off the male charts in 1934. But there is a heavy metal guitarist named Vivian Campbell and an educator / activist by the name of Vivian Wilson Henderson. And they are both male Vivs. Doris was prominent in boys until the 1920s as well. Hillary fell off the male charts in 1932. There are famous male Hillaries, including philosopher Hillary Whitehall Putnam, which I feel like I've heard that name before. Mackenzie didn't fall off the male charts until 2002. Leslie, we know, Leslie Odom Jr. There are some other Leslies I feel like that we have heard of that are men, but it did fall off the male charts in 1998. Did you know that Bob Hope's real name was Leslie?
I did not.
I didn't know that either. That's his real first name.
Well, and we have good old Lindsey Graham.
And there's also U.S. President Leslie Lynch King Jr. Who is that?
I have no idea.
Gerald Ford.
What?
That's Gerald Ford's real name, Leslie Lynch King Jr.
Whoa.
Right?
I feel like you must have told me that because we talked about
him. So I'm like, I must have known this before, but it did not register. But then I already mentioned Margaret, so I'm going to mention Joyce. That fell off in 1947, and there was a novelist by the name of Joyce Carey that was a male. So
doesn't it make you feel a little silly?
Yeah, I remember
we have these snap feelings about something that literally 100 years ago was considered to be a boy's name.
I mean, Ashley in Little Women. That's a boy.
Yeah, I think there's an Ashley in Gone with the Wind, too.
I think you might be right with that. Yeah, it's interesting how much all of that changes. Well, that's all I've got in my notes. Do you have anything else you want to add?
That is all I have in my notes, too. So this was a bit of a shorter episode. But like we said, there was not a lot of hard evidence,
research things to be discussed
that we could find on this topic. But that kind of made me want to talk about it more because I was like, I feel like maybe this is something that a lot of people don't know about or don't think about.
Exactly.
And it does have repercussions.
I think it's a really great way for us to kind of close off our Women's History Month because it's kind of one final thing that I feel like is something that all women can relate to in some way, shape, or form that we've, gone through in our lives. So I hope that you all enjoyed another Women's History Month. If there's any merch that you want to check out, you can go to the link in our bio on our Instagram or go to the link in the show notes wherever you're listening. We have a Facebook business and group page. You can rate and review us on the business page and chat with the other listeners on the group page. Last but certainly not least, the best way you can support Keegan and I is by leaving us a positive 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It truly does mean so much to us and it really does help. All right, that's all we got for you today. With all that being said, we encourage you to rage on. Bye-bye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did it turn to the sky?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.